Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Text number 37. Chalanam Vyuhanam Prapti. Netritvam Dravya Sabdaya. Savendriyanam Atmatvam. Yokaramavilakshanam Chalanam Vyuhanam Prapti Nitritvam Dravya Sabdaya Savendriyanam Atmatvam Yokaramavilakshanam Chalanam Vyuhanam Prapti Nitritvam Dravya Sabdaya Savendriyanam Atmatvam Ayokam Vilakshanam Chalanam Moving Vyuhanam Mixing. Prapti. Allowing approach. Nitritvam. Carrying. Dravya Sabdayo. Particles of substances and sound. Sarva Indriyanam. Of all the senses. Atmatvam. Providing for the proper function. Proper functioning here. Vayor, of air. Karma, by actions. Abhilakshanam, the distant characteristics. Translation. The action of the air is exhibited in movements, mixing, allowing approach to the objects of sound, and other sense perceptions, and providing for the proper functioning of all other senses. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. We can perceive the action of the air when the branches of a tree move or when dry leaves on the ground collect together. Similarly, it is only by the action of the air that a body moves. And when the air circulation is impeded, many diseases result. Paralysis, nervous breakdowns, madness, and many other diseases are actually due to an insufficient circulation of air. In the Ayurvedic system, these diseases are treated on the basis of air circulation. If from the beginning one takes care of the process of air circulation, such diseases cannot take place. From the Ayurveda as well as from the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is clear that so many activities are going on internally and externally because of air alone. And as soon as there is some deficiency in the air circulation, these activities cannot take place. Here it is clearly stated, Netritvam Dravya Sabdaya. Our sense of proprietorship over action is also due to the activity of the air. If the air circulation is stifled, we cannot approach a place after hearing. If someone calls us, we hear the sound because of the air circulation. And if we approach that sound or the place from which the sound comes, it is clearly said in this verse that these are all movements of the air. The ability to detect odours is also due to the action of the air. Chakshuram Ritanyana Tasma Shri Guruve Namaha. So here, I'll read the translation again. The action of the air is exhibited in movements, mixing, allowing approach to the objects of sound and other sense perceptions, and providing for the proper functioning of all other senses. So, Srila Prabhupada gives examples which derive from the scriptures how we can perceive the action of the air. Just like when the branches of a tree move, or when dry leaves on the ground collect together, because so there are two different things here that the air is doing. One, it is making things move individually, and sometimes it is bringing things together and moving them collectively. And so by understanding this principle, even, this is something, of course, that even children can understand about the movements of air, so it's very easily explained how important air is. And you could imagine reading it, a child's book to them, and all of a sudden they get the, very profound understanding that air is a very important thing. It's not just there. also as adults, we from the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get that understanding, scientific understanding that, things are not just existing, but they're all have a particular qualities and essential connections with our lives and everything we do. From this understanding of air, just seeing how it moves objects like trees and branches, and then we can understand that the internal airs within the body, externally, the airs outside the body, creating different activities, and within the body, air is also the cause of the movements of the body. Just like, if you've ever had a flat tire in a car, and so the tire decompresses, and then you get an air pump, and you pump it up, and you can see the tire expand like that. And when the tire expands, the car goes up, even though the car. Sometimes, you see a truck weighing, so many tons, sometimes they get stuck under a bridge. Okay. Now, you imagine trying to lift that truck, and move it, very difficult, especially when it's stuck like that. But if you get the, let a bit of air out of the tyres, and the truck sinks down, and then you can drive it forward, and then you put some more air in the tyre, and up it goes again. So, in that way, even a big truck would just become unable to move just by the movements of air, which is not a very difficult thing to do. Everything becomes moving again like that. So, in this way, the particular the activities of the body, you know, when you stretch your arm out, you know, you can understand that things are, you know, when you stretch your arm or your leg, that the various airs within the body are also, you know, assisting in movement in various different ways like that, and in very powerful ways, they're you know, moving by the use of air. And so from one analogy, we then come to understand how air is operating within the body. Now, in the Ayurveda, which is the medical sort of branch of the Vedas, this is refined to a very wonderful science. And as Prabhupada says here, that it is only by the action of air that the body moves, and when the air circulation is impeded, many diseases may result. Paralysis, nervous breakdowns. So this is when, so, you know, paralysis, of course, you know, we can understand that sometimes the movements of different limbs can become, you know, impeded. That's right, you'll notice I'm sitting with my knee up a little bit this morning because the arthritic condition, sometimes it's, yeah, getting off. The ability to bend and move it is, you know, very difficult. And so this is, you know, ultimately related to, in the Ayurveda, you can come down to the malfunctioning of the different life airs. But even on a, you know, a more subtle level, the nervous system, the mental system, here Prabhupada describes madness, many other diseases are actually due to an insufficient circulation of air. So even, you know, the mental condition or disturbance in different, you know. So therefore, in the Ayurvedic system, diseases are treated on the basis of the air circulation. So very, very subtle. You know, modern science, of course, or, you know, allopathic, Western, they have, you know, they operate on a different level, but still it's very valuable. Some of these ancient sciences, like the Ayurvedic, and you know, it's very, very difficult to find, you know, good Ayurvedic doctors. It's probably more difficult for people to follow their directions. You know, Ayurveda, the in the system of Ayurveda, of course, you know, they will prescribe a lifestyle that preserves the, you know, functioning of the life airs. So they would recommend, you know, no smoking, no drinking, no, you know, this and that, and, you know, not too much anxiety, and, you know, regular, being moderate in one's work and everything like that. No one follows that. So these days what happens is that after, a lifestyle of all the bad habits, then you just want a quick fix and then get back into what you're doing, you know, next day back into the work, next day back into the sense gratification. So just like, you know, they have all these you know, secret remedies for hangovers. Now, of course, the real remedy for a hangover is don't drink. You know, that's the remedy. It's quite obvious, but, you know, they have all these different things. They get the egg yolk and they mix it with, you know, this and that and the other, you know, like that. And they write books about it and they make millions of dollars. But people don't want that sort of a fix where, oh, you can fix it, but I have to stop drinking. They want the fix, I'll keep drinking and you somehow, you know, sort out the hangovers, like that. So, you know, this is why. And of course, Western medicine, you know, it is able to deal with a lot, you know, they make a lot of money, but they can sometimes, you know, do the quick fix like that and let you go on with your lifestyle like that. But, you know, also, I'm not sure where I read it, but in one, might have been one letter or, you know, lecture of Prabhupada, that he did mention that in Kali Yuga, some of the ailments, the illnesses that we face are very, very powerful, you know, Kali Yuga ailments, you know, and quite widespread. And sometimes Prabhupada, you know, accepted that you need something quite powerful and quite strong immediately, straight away, like that. And of course, if that can be in the long term, coupled with good diet and good lifestyle, and you know, medicine, dealing on a more subtle level, then that is also good. But sometimes you actually just need something very powerful to stop a person from dying or, you know, losing a limb or something like that. So, you know, that is also there. So, you know, it has value. It should not be, you know, we don't reject it outright. Similarly, you know, I've heard that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he also, you know, he practiced astrology in his younger years, and he practiced, of course, Vedic astrology. But he also practiced, you know, was able to, you know, do the calculations according to the Western or tropical astrology. You know, their systems that they work off a different basis, but it can't be rejected outright. You know, there's some value there, but of course the Vedic system has a lot more ability to properly read the astrological indications. But it's not something that is just completely rejected, just like, you know, there's the Chinese astrology in different systems, different cultures. So, you know, people are born in the year of the monkey or the dog or what have you. When you look at them, it's quite surprising how some of those have, you know, some value as far as character analysis. So some things may be inferior, but it doesn't mean that it should be rejected outright at that. But the Ayurveda is certainly dealing on a very subtle basis and very, very powerful, although finding its application is not always possible or effective because of how we live and how we take the Ayurvedic process. So, but in general, Srila Prabhupada, you know, there's an essential thing in everything that we should take. And Prabhupada mentioned that for good health, generally four things, let's see if I can remember them. One is plenty of fresh air, you know, to go outside every now and then. Because these days that sounds you would think that sounds like a lot of common sense, but previously children used to actually play outside pretty much all day long, and they'd come in when it was time for, you know, something to eat, or, you know, they'd fallen over and grazed their knee or something. But these days children don't play outside; they play inside all day. You know, and it's becoming more and more difficult for children to actually go outside, and so now they're, you know, they're having minimums. It's to such a degree that they're giving minimums that, you know, they're finding children not going out enough, you know, for their proper mental and physical development. So they're sort of having to regulate that you must be outside for at least half an hour, or, you know, such and such like that. Because it's otherwise, you know, people don't see the value of getting that fresh air and just being outside. There are a lot of sciences which derive from these Vedic sciences, such as the Ayurveda, and you know, throughout Egypt and different places, and they're very, very popular in this world. You know, currently, a lot of they call them New Age sciences, and they connect with the elements of earth, water, air, and fire, and they try to, you know. Does anyone know the name of some of those? There's a couple of very famous New Age sort of healing techniques. What's that? Reiki is one. There's another one. There's another one. But the idea with them, of course, is that they're connecting the energy of the elements with the energy of the elements within the body. The body is made of the same thing. And, you know, somewhere there's a blockage. So even here you see that Prabhupada says, when the air circulation is impeded, many diseases result. So there's a blockage. You know, just like drainage. You know, when there's a blockage in the drainage, it has to be, something has to be flushed out and allow that water to flow through and everything, you know, goes well. So it is like that, that some of these New Age sciences are really the remnants of this Vedic science, where you're getting the elements of the body are being regenerated by a very powerful surge. It's like if you flush out a drain, you know, water should just flow through there, you know, at a certain rate. But when you flush it out, you have to really power the water through it, just, you know, really wash it out, and perhaps like that. So it's like that. Some of these healing processes are remnants from the Vedas, because we know that when when the Vedic system sort of gradually began to break up, many of the Kshatriyas and many of the teachings and sciences of the Vedas did spread throughout the world, you know, into the Middle East and China and Europe and different places like that, and you can still find the remnants of, you know, the Vedic teaching, just like the Aryan civilization. Prabhupada considered that the you know, many Westerners were actually from the Aryan civilization, you know, that they, as things broke up and like that. And by connecting them with different personalities from, you know, the Aryan race as they sort of went to different parts of the world. So this, but the Ayurveda, of course, is the science intact. And so Prabhupada mentions four things for good health: fresh air, avoid too much anxiety, stress, good diet, regulation, you know, being regulated in one's eating, sleeping, working, like that, being regulated. And lots of fresh water. I think they were the four in memory. They're very, very simple medicine, very simple tablet, isn't it? You know, fresh water, fresh air, being regulated, and avoid anxiety. And if you live like that, you'll avoid most diseases. You know? I was hearing on the news that the oldest woman in the world, of course, that they know of, they don't know about Srila Vyasadeva and so many personalities like that, but the oldest woman in the world is supposed to be 117 years old. I think she celebrates her birthday today. And so she's the last person surviving from 1899. So she was actually, she's seen that century, this century, and the century in the middle, and this century. And they asked her about, you know, health, and she said that she really had very little to do with doctors throughout her whole life. basically, you know, there were certain foods that she liked to eat, and she worked well, and, you know, just tried to live a reasonable life. But by that, she just, you know, she 117, didn't like doctors at all, never went to them, you know, like that, didn't depend upon them. Most people these days, you know, you can't get through a week without, you know, thinking I should need to go to the doctor for something. She's lived, you know, she's lived through all the world, the wars. World War One, World War Two, you know. She's looking forward to World War Three. No. But, you know, it's just that, you know, diet and just fresh air and, you know, working and, you know, just living a wholesome life like that. The oldest woman in the world. So these essential parts of the Vedas, Prabhupada teaches us in the Bhagavatam, right? And so here he also describes that, he says, here it is clearly stated, netritvam dravya sabdayo, our sense of proprietorship over action is also due to the activity of the air. If the air circulation is stifled, we cannot approach a place after hearing. So previously we've heard of a more subtle sense of hearing. And so we may hear about certain things in this material world, and that's a connection with those objects. But the air will actually move us, allow us to move and contact those things that we've heard about. And Prabhupada says, if someone calls us, we hear the sound because of the air circulation, and we approach that sound or the place from which the sound comes. It is clearly said in this verse that these are all the movements of the air. The ability to detect odours is also due to the action of the air. So here in the translation it is describing, so the action of air is exhibited in movements, mixing, allowing the approach to the objects of sound and other sense perceptions, and providing for the proper functioning of all the other senses, from the mind, you know, the working senses, knowledge acquiring senses, like that. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, some very you know, fundamental, you know, here's the title itself is called The Fundamental Principles of Material Nature. Very fundamental. It's a very unradical movement. there's a lot of so-called fundamentalists, but they tend to be quite radical. But you know, Krishna consciousness is you know, very fundamental, you know, to the point that you know, people may find it too ordinary, too you know, waiting. Sometimes you know, I've heard the statement where devotees say, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, nothing's happening. And I think, you lucky person. You're living a peaceful life where nothing is happening. You don't have... you just, you know, you're just waiting for your next, you know, opportunity to sit and chant Hare Krishna and eat prasadam, and in between nothing is happening. You're a very fortunate person. Because in the middle of Kali Yuga, you try and find someone else who's, there's nothing happening. Kali Yuga is an ocean of problems, you know, day to day, week to week. If you can sit down and chant Hare Krishna, Don't ever get tired of that, you know. Don't ever feel that there's something, you know, more that you want to be doing in Kali Yuga, you know, amidst the sense objects and the various senses interacting with them. Krishna consciousness, by Srila Prabhupada, gave us this opportunity to chant Hare Krishna, be happy. Prabhupada once said, he said, the definition of a Vaishnava, they can sit down anywhere, any place, any time, and be happy by chanting Hare Krishna. How easy it is. And He says, if there's a little service for me to do, yes, let me do a little service. At the end of the day, if there's somewhere I can lay down, get some sleep, yeah. And a little bit of prasadam, that's it. Bas, he says. That's the definition of a Vaishnava. Such a, you know, simple, uncomplicated life. But of course, and you know, they like to hear the Srimad Bhagavatam and associate with other devotees and chant with other devotees and just going with that process of hearing and chanting. These activities, such as we're hearing this verse today, about how the senses, the air, the various sense perceptions are acting. Just by hearing this verse today, it can save all of us from millions and millions of births in the material world. Imagine how much trouble we might go in this one life. How much trouble if we took birth, another dozen times, another hundreds of times, millions of times, and just by hearing the verse and just slowing everything down and just, looking at things very carefully, very profoundly, we stop that cycle. Here, the Bhagavatam is giving us an opportunity. Something that's, again, very rarely done in Kali Yuga. People live at such a fast pace of life. People live at such a fast pace that their children grow up before they even notice anything they've done. Before they've properly communicated with them, spent some time playing with the children, talking to them, answering their questions. Husband and wife have, very little time for each other. sometimes I go and visit my mother. Whenever I visit my mother, you've got to sit down on the front porch and have a chat for at least an hour to 2 hours. There's no getting out of it. As soon as I get out of the car, even if I've got two handfuls of bags and things, she'll start talking. So I'm expected to just drop them right there, and don't even put them inside, sit down and talk. And I often say to her, I say, look up the street, Mum. Do you see anyone else sitting on the porch talking? She says, no. And you can drive around the streets. You can drive all over the city. I drive a lot. And I don't ever see anyone sitting on the porch talking. Maybe 5 minutes or something. It's something that was people used to do in the past. They used to talk to each other, and discuss, and just look at the sky, contemplate the air, hear the birds, like that. But people don't do it. So we live at such a fast pace of life, we haven't even noticed that people stop talking to each other. The other day, I was putting on electricity in the flat next to my mother's. And I had a different electricity company to the one in my mother's flat. And what had happened is somehow or another, when my mother put her electricity on, instead of saying 12B, she said 12A. And then the people, when they were in that flat, they said 12B. So what had happened is that they were actually paying each other's electricity. My mother's been doing that for 40 years. Until I sat down one day and had a chat with her on the porch. Because I was having trouble with the electricity companies, and for about a month I kept calling both of them and I couldn't get... So what happened one day, I've got the electricity company on the line, so they're both sending emails, and letters to me and to each other. And I said to them, have you ever tried talking to the other company? And the lady said, maybe we could try that. This is right? This is something completely new. It's unheard of in the modern world. And she actually called the other company, right, while I was in the line, and they had a chat and fixed the problem like that. And it was a new experience for them. They actually spoke to each other. So, you know, we live at such a fast-paced life. You know, computers are whiz-bang, you know, doing everything, you know, such a speed. But so many things, you know, just like that, you know. I mean, here we sit in the Bhagavatam class, we're supposed to be discussing the, you know, highest philosophy, but, you know, we won't be healthy enough to chant Hare Krishna if we don't have, you know, some water, some fresh air, try and reduce the anxiety, be regulated. You know, we'll have a lot of trouble. You know, the Bhagavatam, it helps us to, you know, slow down, just stop for a minute, you know, racing through the world, the rat race they call it. It's definitely a race anyway, but they call it a rat race, but we see them as innocent, you know, very nice people who are caught up in a system where, you know, some unscrupulous people are exploiting people, you know, you know, putting a lot of pressure on them for their own financial gains. So, but the Bhagavatam allows us, you know, every morning, you know, you come, you hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, here I see, you know, this is one of the benefits of, you know, technology and computers, is that people can sit at home and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. They can take that time to slow down, stop, you know, just properly think. And this is one of the wonderful aspects of Krishna consciousness. The devotees take that opportunity that in the morning, before they race out into the world with their burnt toast and their cup of coffee, they stop and think about what they're going to do that day. You know, they spend an hour and a half, 2 hours, and they'll chant Hare Krishna, clear the mind, and hear the Bhagavatam, you know, learn how to appreciate everything, understand how everything is working, that we're not, when we race out into the world to do something, we have to understand, of course, we're not doing it independently. As we see here, you know, with air, without air, what could we do today? You know, we're actually completely dependent upon the air, all the elements. We tend to forget, no, I'm just going to go out and do this, that and the other. We're completely dependent upon higher energies and powers all put into place so that we can do anything at all, even think with our brain. So a devotee, they fix their mind upon, as described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are five causes of action. One of them being the super soul. There's the body, the senses themselves, how they're interacting, the soul, and the type of work that we're doing. So when a devotee works after meditating like that, they see that everything they're doing in cooperation with the Lord and His energies. Then you get perfect action. And there's no use racing into something, because if the Lord, you know, Krishna doesn't want it, it's just going to cause you a lot of trouble, or it's not going to happen. The best thing is to, you know, fix the mind and understand, what would Krishna like me to do with this body, with the senses, with this mind, that's beneficial to my Krishna consciousness, beneficial to others, both materially and spiritually. And after meditating like that, then we go out and do something. You know. And even if it's just we do one thing correctly that day, it's better than that. We get 100 things done and they're all a useless waste of time or troublesome. So I'll leave it there if anyone has.